Welcome to Voter Information, the show that looks at elections in the city, the state, and the nation. I'm your election guru, Mark Braun here. Glad you could join us today. And a reminder, you're listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read in Ayers, L.A. are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. All right. So it is going to be presidential stuff this week. Do have a couple of other things to get to first. One of those being, you guessed it, an obituary. From the city and state section of the Los Angeles Times, Friday, July 17, 2026, Joe Carcio, 1937 to 2026, former coach and Huntington Beach mayor, by Matt Szabo. Joe Carcio was a lover of people and a lover of baseball, and those two passions converged when Ocean View Little League won the World Series while he was Huntington Beach's mayor in 2011. Carcio, who coached baseball and football at Ocean View High, was more than happy to put a parade together to celebrate the youngster's accomplishment. "I always say that because we rotate mayor, it always seems like we have the right mayor for the right year," said Jill Hardy, a two-time mayor herself who served with Carcio on the city council for 6 years. Joe, the baseball coach, was mayor when the Ocean View Little League team won the World Series, and that was just so perfect. It was so important for him, and, of course, such an honor for all of us who have to have the Little League World Series team here. Better known by some as Jersey Joe, Carcio died of natural causes July 9 at the age of 89 in New Jersey, according to Dave Garofalo, his longtime friend and fellow former Surf City mayor. Carcio was first elected to the Huntington Beach City Council in 2006 and re-elected in 2010. A bid for a third term in 2016 was unsuccessful. A New Jersey native and U.S. Army veteran, he settled in Huntington Beach in the 1970s. He owned a screen printing business as well as a pair of restaurants, Bella Luna and Jersey Joe's Deli/Restaurant, before getting into local politics. Jersey Joe's on Olive Street in downtown Huntington Beach opened in 2002. It was a successful business, Garofalo said. It was truly a sports bar, so not so much in watching sports on television, but talking sports person to person, he said. And if one was lucky, he or she might be able to strike up a conversation about baseball with the owner himself. "He was a robust guy," Garofalo said. "He was out there. Timid would not be one of the words you'd use to describe him. He was generally liked. Everybody's got some detractors someplace, but he did a good job as mayor." His way of getting things done was to grab the ball and run with it versus meticulously planning every step. Another highlight of Carcio's tenure as mayor was presenting the key to the city to surfing legend Kelly Slater, Garofalo said. Mike Posey, another former Huntington Beach council member and mayor, said Carcio helped him launch his own political career, putting him on the 4th of July Parade Executive Board and eventually the Planning Commission. "When I did run for city council, Joe was always a source of knowledge and inspiration," Posey said, "and he was really sincere. I remember talking to him before the election and I said, 'Joe, how do you learn all this stuff? There was so much to learn.' And Joe said, 'Try to pick a couple of things and become an expert at them. That will serve you well.' So I did. I learned about housing policy and CalPERS pensions and some other things." Another longtime friend and a Huntington Beach local, Mo Canaudi, called Carcio the people's choice. "He was open to talk about anything," Canaudi said. "He would not get defensive. He would not try to argue. He would listen. And if he had any answers, he would give them to you. If not, he would get back to you. As soon as he met somebody after that, he called them a friend. Everybody was his friend. Whenever he talked about somebody, he would say, 'Oh, my friend so-and-so,' and he had only met them once. That was his personality. Very friendly, very open, never defensive." Carcio moved back to New Jersey in 2022 after his girlfriend, Judith Rouser, sold her a house in Huntington Beach, Posey said. Both of them wanted to be closer to family. Carcio was survived by Rosser, sister Eileen Petrozino, three sons and a daughter, as well as their spouses, three stepchildren, 13 grandchildren, and 16 great-grandchildren. That was Joe Carchio, 1937 to 2026, former coach and Huntington Beach mayor by Matt Szabo. From the city and state section of the Los Angeles Times, Friday, July 17, 2026. All right, we have an update on the Senate race in South Carolina. From the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, July 21st, 2026, Darlene Graham to run for seat of her late senator brother, by Meg Kinnard. Columbia, South Carolina. Senator Darlene Graham, Republican of South Carolina, said Monday she's running for a full term to replace her late brother Lindsey Graham's Senate seat. "I've made a decision," Graham told Fox News Channel host Sean Hannity, according to a clip released of an interview set to air Monday. "I'm in." The entrance of Graham swarmed in last week to fulfill the remaining months of her late brother's term, which expires in January, and to the Republican scramble to select a new Senate nominee further complicates an already rushed process after Lindsey Graham's death this month. A week-long filing period opens Tuesday for the special Republican primary, which will be August 11. On Friday, President Trump said that Darlene Graham had his complete and total endorsement to seek the nomination, adding, "Run, Darlene, run." Last week, Governor Henry McMaster appointed Graham to serve the remainder of her brother's term. In his announcement, McMaster made no reference to Graham as a placeholder or symbolic appointment, although a person familiar with McMaster's thinking, but unauthorized to speak publicly, said the governor had never contemplated that she would run for the seat herself. Before the emergence of Graham and their Oval Office meeting after she was sworn in, Trump had suggested he could back a potential candidacy from Republican Representative Russell Fry, who said Monday he would enter the special primary. Funeral services for Lindsey Graham are scheduled to be held next week in Washington and South Carolina. The millions in Graham's campaign account aren't funds that Darlene Graham could directly access in a run of her own, said Bradley A. Smith, a former chairman of the Federal Election Commission. Under federal rules, Lindsey Graham's campaign would be limited to transfer just $2,000 to a potential Darlene Graham candidacy. However, Smith said, there is no limit on how much it could transfer to the National Republican Senatorial Committee, which could, thanks to a Supreme Court decision last month, spend an unlimited amount in coordination with Darlene's campaign. That was Darlene Graham to run for seat of her late senator brother, by Meg Kinnard, from the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. And now here's something regarding the new nominee for Surgeon General, from the Los Angeles Times, Friday, May 1st, 2026. New nominee for Surgeon General. After Casey Means' path stalled in the Senate, Trump picks Nicole Sapphire, a radiologist, by Allie Swenson and Meg Kinnard. Washington. President Trump said Thursday he's nominating radiologist and former Fox News Channel contributor Dr. Nicole Sapphire for Surgeon General after Dr. Casey Means' path forward stalled in the Senate over questions about her experience and her stance on vaccines. In social media posts, Trump said he would nominate Sapphire, whom he called a star physician who has spent her career guiding women facing breast cancer through their diagnosis and treatment. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. complimented the nomination, calling Sapphire a longtime warrior for the MAHA movement. But at least in one instance, she hasn't been in lockstep with Trump's thoughts on health policy, telling the Associated Press in September that his cautions about pregnant women taking Tylenol were oversimplistic and patronizing. Sapphire is director of the breast imaging at Memorial Sloan Kettering Monmouth, according to her profile on the New York-based institution's website. She has a Doctor of Medicine degree from Ross University School of Medicine in Barbados, along with fellowships at the Mayo Clinic, the profile said. She also used the phrase "Make America Healthy Again" before Kennedy claimed it for his political movement. It was the title of a book she wrote in 2020 that criticized government handling of health care and the Affordable Care Act. Means' withdrawal came after her tense exchanges with lawmakers of both parties threw her into question whether she could secure enough votes to advance out of the Senate Health Committee. Her nomination is languished since her confirmation hearing in late February, even as actors from the MAHA movement orchestrated a push to support her bid by surging phone calls to Republican Senators Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine. Both indicated reservations with the pick. In nominating Means last May, Trump sought to hire a close Kennedy ally as the nation's doctor. The 38-year-old, a Stanford-educated physician who said she became disillusioned with the healthcare system and pivoted to a career as an author and entrepreneur, promotes ideas popular with the MAHA movement, including that Americans are over-medicalized and that diet and lifestyle changes should be at the center of efforts to end widespread chronic disease. But Means, who did not finish her surgical residency program and doesn't currently have an active medical license, also had faced scrutiny for her lack of experience and potential conflicts. On top of those concerns, senators grilled her in February about Kennedy's effort to pull back vaccine recommendations, leading to some contentious moments as Means toed the line between support for vaccines and calling them a decision best made by patients and their doctors. In the confirmation hearing, Means was reportedly asked about the birth dose of the hepatitis B vaccine, which the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention stopped recommending for all children late last year, in a move criticized by scientific and medical groups nationwide and currently blocked during a lawsuit. Means has raised doubts about the birth dose, posting on social media in 2024 that giving the vaccine to a newborn whose parents don't have hepatitis B was absolute insanity. In another post earlier Thursday, Trump called Means a strong MAHA warrior and also criticized the intransigence and political games from GOP Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, the chair of the Senate Health Committee, who was facing a tough re-election this year and who interrogated Means about vaccines during the hearing. Means' brother, Callie Means, a health advisor to the Trump administration, blamed Cassidy in a social media post, claiming his constant delay tactics sank the nomination because he didn't bring Means' nomination to a committee vote. Cassidy didn't respond to a request for comment. Means is a second U.S. Surgeon General pick whose nomination has been withdrawn in Trump's second term. Trump withdrew his first nominee, Fox News medical contributor Jeanette Nusswhite, after questions were raised about her academic credentials. Sapphire, like Means, has questioned whether every child needs to get hepatitis B vaccine at birth. She also has criticized COVID vaccine booster requirements, arguing on a radio show in September that they were not always rooted in evidence. In at least one case, Sapphire has diverted from Trump's medical messaging. Last year, as Trump advised pregnant women don't take Tylenol, promoting unproven and in some cases discredited ties between the medication, vaccines, and autism, Sapphire said that although pregnant women generally are advised to take acetaminophen only under medical supervision when necessary and at the lowest effective dose, equally important was that untreated fever or severe pain can also pose serious risks to mothers and babies. She noted that part was missing from Trump's message delivered at a news conference with top U.S. health officials. For decades, women have endured a paternalistic tone in medicine. We've moved past dismissing symptoms as hysteria, Sapphire wrote in an email to the Associated Press at the time. The president's recent comments on Tylenol in pregnancy are a prime example. Advising moderation was sound. Delivering it in a patronizing, simplistic way was not. On a podcast at the time, Sapphire said the news conference was full of hyperbole and really painful to watch. Means and Sapphire did not respond to requests for comment. That was new nominee for Surgeon General by Ali Swenson and Meg Kinnard from the Los Angeles Times, Friday, May 1st, 2026. Swenson and Kinnard write for the Associated Press. Kinnard reported from Columbia, South Carolina. You notice it said Bill Cassidy was facing a tough re-election this year. Well, he was defeated in the primary. And now on to an article for one possible presidential contender for 28 from the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, June 17, 2026. Rahm Emanuel tests bid for 2028. Obama's chief of staff meets voters in New Hampshire, a key state in presidential race, by Steve Sloan, Warner, New Hampshire. For Rahm Emanuel, the road to the White House runs through the uphill climbs of rural New Hampshire. The one-time Democratic congressman, White House chief of staff, Chicago mayor, and U.S. ambassador to Japan has informally announced his ambition to return to power in Washington, but his weekend trip through the state that typically holds the first presidential primary was hardly subtle. There were the Union Hall visits and intimate house parties, staples of New Hampshire political rituals. At one event in the backyard of a home in Concord, Emanuel greeted voters and practiced a stump speech that highlighted strains on the middle class and the excesses of the tax system. And then there was the bike tour. Over the course of 3 days, Emanuel pedaled more than 117 miles across New Hampshire from Portsmouth on the coast to Hanover on the Vermont border and what he dubbed the spin-free tour, a nod to his blunt demeanor that he sees as an asset for a Democratic Party trying to move beyond its devastating losses in 2024. Tough times require a tough leader, Emanuel told the Associated Press during a break at a coffee shop in Warner. I don't think this is just about learning the words to Kumbaya. For someone who has spent the better part of three decades in the highest orbits of political power, the 66-year-old Emanuel is in the unusual position of lacking a natural platform. His likely rivals in the Democratic presidential contest are mostly younger and, as governors, senators, or a recently departed vice president, can more easily attract attention. And despite his thick resume, Emanuel isn't especially well known outside political circles, as demonstrated by a woman who asked who he was after he left the coffee shop. When informed that it was Emanuel and that he was considering a campaign, she responded, "A campaign for what?" As many prominent Democrats focus on castigating President Trump, Emanuel has released a flurry of personal proposals addressing everything from social media bans for children to prediction markets and a mandatory retirement age of 75 for those in public office. Emanuel is often on the road talking education in Mississippi and Michigan. He'll travel to Israel next month to address the U.S.-Israeli relationship as the war in Gaza has spurred new divisions in both political parties, especially among younger voters. He is a regular guest on podcasts, ranging from those hosted by Katie Couric and Kara Swisher to shows focused on fly fishing. He often uses the appearances to knock his own party for overreaching in cultural debates, particularly those involving the rights of transgender people. It's a message of centrism that has echoes of that of the first president he served, Bill Clinton. "We did things that were really ridiculous," he said of Democrats on an episode of Kirk's podcast that posted last week. "Rather than worry about classroom excellence, we were worried about bathroom and locker room access." And he hops on the bike. The tour gives him a chance to both demonstrate his physical fitness at a time of heightened awareness of the nation's aging political leaders and to introduce himself to the state's notoriously picky voters before the rest of the field swoops in after the November midterms. "It is early," said Representative Maggie Goodland, a Democrat of New Hampshire, who appeared alongside Emanuel at the Concord House Party. "But what I'd say is the people of New Hampshire know how to vet candidates, and they're the most engaged electorate in the country." Martha Cruz, a 76-year-old retired special education teacher from Laconia, New Hampshire, is just that type of voter. Active in her local Democratic Party, she traveled to the Concord event to see Emanuel after hearing him in interviews. "I'm going away really enthused about him," she said, adding that he was right on to prepare a campaign so early. The future of the presidency seemed a world away during a hilly 20-mile stretch of the ride on Saturday, which included an elevation gain of more than 1,300 feet. Along with a cadre of friends and aides, Emanuel cycled past homes where residents were tending to their yards or celebrating a recent graduation on their front patio. He was chatty at times as he rode with the pack and cycled along at other points, showing little strain in navigating the steep hills. With summer finally creeping into New England, the humidity was high and the rain was occasionally intense. The group stopped for water and snacks every 10 to 15 miles, huddling under a barn during one rainy stretch. A small group of local activists met up with Emmanuel at the coffee shop in Warner, where he hailed court from a rocking chair. But the realities of modern politics occasionally asserted themselves. The group cycled past signs praising Trump and denigrating his predecessor, Joe Biden. As the miles dragged on, a chase vehicle crept by periodically, with cameras poking out of the window to capture scenes that could later be shared on social media, where Emmanuel now has an almost daily presence. And the whirr of the midterms wasn't far away. In neighboring Maine, Graham Plantner was contending with a drumbeat of reporters about his history with women that has left some Democrats worried that the party's path to a Senate majority is suddenly imperiled. Emmanuel, who helped power Democrats to their sweeping 2006 victories in the U.S. House, said the jury is still out on whether Plantner can win the Senate race. Everybody is holding their breath whether this is the start of something or the end of something, he said. But as the broader debate over the Democratic Party's ideological future unfolds, Emmanuel said he thought voices of moderation were prevailing. He noted recent wins by Rebecca Bennett, who emerged from a crowded Democratic primary in New Jersey to win the nomination for a competitive House seat, along with Josh Turek, the new Democratic Senate nominee in Iowa. There's a bigger character piece to this than ideological, Emmanuel said. There's radical moderates, and their profile and characters speak to kind of fighting a system, which is what's needed right now. Don Daly, a 60-year-old state employee from Concord, watched Emmanuel talk from a bench in the backyard of the House party. He said that Emmanuel probably steps on a few toes. But I think that's what we need right now, he said. Some of our Democratic leaders haven't been strong enough. That was Rahm Emanuel test bid for 2028 by Stephen Sloan. From the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, June 27, 2026, Sloan writes for the Associated Press. This also mentioned Graham Plantner. As most of you know, he has in fact resigned as the Democratic nominee for senator in Maine. All right, here's one regarding Trump's approval from the Los Angeles Times, Saturday, June 20, 2026. Trump's approval on Iran stays low, polls show. By Lindley Sanders and Amelia Thompson DeVoe. Washington. Most Americans continue to disapprove of how President Trump is handling Iran, while his overall presidential approval holds steady, according to a new APNORC poll that was conducted as he suggested a deal with Iran had been reached. The poll points to just how unpopular the war, which began on February 28, has been with Americans, even as the Republican president turned abruptly from threatening Iran to reopening negotiations. Support for his handling of the war remained lopsidedly partisan. About two-thirds of U.S. adults, or 65%, disapprove of how Trump is handling his issues with Iran. But while the vast majority of Democrats and independents view Trump's actions negatively, only 28% of Republicans are unhappy. Americans' views on how the president is handling Iran are roughly in line with his overall approval, which stands at 37%, unchanged from an Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll conducted in May. The new survey was conducted June 11 through 17, just after Trump called off threats to escalate the war in Iran. The poll was fielded as Trump announced a deal with Iran and authorized an end to the U.S. naval blockade in the Strait of Hormuz, concluding just before the deal was signed Wednesday. Approval of Trump's actions on Iran has been low over the past few months, but in interviews, some Republicans also weren't pleased with the outcome of this week's agreement, which gives Iran an immediate benefit, allowing it to sell its oil freely again. The deal also reopens the strait without tolls for 2 months, restarts talks between the U.S. and Iran over Tehran's nuclear program, and calls for Tehran to dilute its stockpile of highly enriched uranium. David Farrington, a 79-year-old Republican-leaning independent in Fort Worth, doesn't have any love lost for Iran, but he's frustrated that the agreement focused on the strait and didn't deliver more on the country's nuclear weapons program. Any agreement regarding the strait is hardly what I would consider a recognizable concession on the part of Iran, Farrington said, so I consider that some fluff that attempts to make this agreement look better when it's not. Only about one-third of U.S. adults approve of how Trump is handling Iran in the new poll, in line with May. Donald McBride, a 28-year-old independent in Plano, Texas, is frustrated that Trump has not maintained his campaign promise to keep America out of foreign wars. McBride voted for Trump, but he opposed going to war with Iran. I would like the war to end, he said. The original objective of the war was to end the Iranian regime, and that's just not possible. I don't really know why we'd continue fighting. The poll suggests most Americans want action in Iran to wrap up. Even with an agreement on the horizon, 53% of U.S. adults said American military action against Iran had gone too far, which is only a slight decline from 59% in March. About 4 in 10 Republicans, though, said in the latest poll that action has been about right, and 37% said it had not gone far enough. Joan Jones, a 64-year-old independent in Northwest Florida, believes the United States' actions in Iran have been necessary to address the threat Iran posed. Those attacks are ultimately to protect us from nuclear attacks, Jones said. I think we have to go through that and eliminate that worry so we don't have that hovering over us. About one-third, 34% of U.S. adults approve of how Trump is handling Israel. Tensions have been rising between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Trump as the president criticizes recent Israeli attacks in Lebanon, which jeopardized negotiations between Washington and Tehran. James Huffman, a 69-year-old Republican in Medway, Ohio, thinks Trump is taking the wrong strategy when it comes to Netanyahu. Netanyahu is not going to do everything Trump wants. He's going to do what he wants, Huffman said. I just don't think it's effective. About one-third of U.S. adults approve of Trump's approach to the economy. That's in line with last month and continues a challenging stretch for Trump on the issue. Jones, the Florida independent, is more optimistic than most. She said she can hardly leave the house some hours without getting stuck in the traffic of tourists heading to the beach on vacation. She also spots lines around the block for Starbucks, McDonald's, and Chick-fil-A in her community, all signs that the economy is doing well overall. I think President Trump's policies are contributing to a better economy, Jones said. Other Republicans are more skeptical, a troubling sign for a president who prides himself on his business acumen. Only 69% of Republicans approve of how he's handling the economy, slightly lower than the 78% who approve of how he's handling the presidency overall. Patricia Bailey, a 42-year-old Republican in Parkersburg, West Virginia, sees an economy where prices have gotten out of control. I just said the other night ordering pizza is for rich people, she said. Bailey voted for Trump but added, he's kind of let me down a little bit. Even if high prices preceded Trump, Bailey doesn't think he's lived up to his pledge to improve the economy. I think he got so distracted with the war that he forgot some old promises, she said. That was Trump's approval on Iran stays low, poll shows, by Lindley Sanders and Amelia Thompson DeVau, from the Los Angeles Times, Saturday, June 20, 2026. Sanders and Thompson DeVau write for the Associated Press. The AP-NORC poll of 3,040 adults was conducted June 11 to 17 using a sample drawn from NORC's probability-based AmeriSpeaks panel, which is designed to be a representative of the U.S. population. The margin of sampling error for adults overall is plus or minus 2.8 percentage points. All right, we got an opinion article here from the Opinion Voices section of the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, June 24, 2026. Trump's second term is murky and embarrassing. The reflecting pool fiasco is a microcosm of nearly everything that vexes people about the president, by Jonah Goldberg, columnist. Every time I get asked by a TV anchor what I think about the drama of the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool, my favorite historical headline from the Onion comes to mind. World's largest metaphor hits iceberg. And every time I do, I hear from defenders of the Trump administration complaining about the disproportionate media coverage of what should be a very minor story in the grand sweep of things. They have a point. President Trump has done some good work rehabbing Washington, D.C., where I live, but the reflecting pool has bedeviled him. Algae keep returning to the pool, despite the administration's best efforts and attempts to remedy the problem have yielded further problems. I can think of scores of stories that deserve more attention on the merits. But there are two problems with this complaint. First, it was Trump who invited extensive scrutiny of the effort. I'm very proud of it, he said before the algae counteroffensive. I'm very good at building things and constructing things, so I hope you go to take a good look at it. Second, there's the metaphor on the mall problem. The reflecting pool is a microcosm of nearly everything that vexes people about the second Trump term. We can start with his decision to ignore the usual rules and procedures to give a no-bid job to a contractor for the repair and paint work. Trump said it would cost $1.8 million. The costs have grown nearly tenfold. To deal with the insurrectionist algae, he gave another no-bid job to a Mar-a-Lago crony, campaign donor, and convicted felon who looks like a villain from the old Dick Tracy comic strip. The man who vowed to drain the swamp of D.C.'s corrupt cronyism used figurative swampy means to deliver literal swampy ends. Another familiar aspect of the pool fiasco. A project Trump touted as proof of his genius and expertise becomes proof of his unpatriotic enemies undermining him when it flounders. Without any evidence, Trump claimed that the only reason the reflecting pool's paint is peeling and algae blooming is because anti-American vandals sabotage it with a 300-foot-long gash. How vandals evaded park police, security cameras, and his own National Guard deployment remains unknown. Never mind how they put a 300-foot gash in a paint job Trump described as so very strong you couldn't if you had a knife. I don't want to give anybody ideas. If you had a knife, you can't even cut it. So strong, so powerful. But the metaphorical meaning of the miasma on the mall hardly ends there. During a May 27 cabinet meeting, Trump boasted at length about the reflecting pool job and then handed the meeting off to his Secretary of Defense. I think actually your efforts on the reflecting pool are actually a really great segue, Pete Hegseth said. If you look at Washington and Lincoln, these are two men that faced monumental tasks and stood up in historic fashion and delivered for the American people, Hegseth gushed. And when you step back and look back at 47 years of what Iran waged, there is only one man over the course of both presidencies who stood up and said they will never get a nuclear weapon. As with so much, Hegseth says, that this is not exactly true. Every president since Bill Clinton has said that a nuclear Iran was unacceptable. It's true that Trump is the only president to use massive military force in the name of preventing it. Whether his efforts have made the never claim a reality is, at best, an open question. What isn't an open question, Trump's unilateral Iranian adventure did not go as planned. What began as another example of Trump trying to will into existence the reality he wanted segued into murky, embarrassing, and costly spectacle with no satisfying end in sight. Talk about your metaphors. That's because, as the saying goes, the enemy gets a vote. Trump can bypass or ignore many laws, but not the law of unintended consequences. The defining feature of Trump's presidency is his unvanquishable belief that laws, rules and norms are impediments to his will and genius. He expects, nay, demands, Hegseth-like sycophancy and praise recognizing that alleged genius. And when events conspire against Trump, the fault must lie in vandals and lies from fake news. The international order, like the domestic order, is not natural. They are more like a man-made garden constructed out of the wilderness of the human condition. When the garden is not maintained, when the rules go ignored, the jungle grows back, just like the algae. That was Trump's second term is Murky and Embarrassing by Jonah Goldberg, columnist, from the Opinion Voices section of the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, June 24, 2026. All right, we have a little time left. Let's actually focus on the presidential race of 2028, and we've come across two actual declared candidates on the Republican side, at least. So this is from Wikipedia, and one declared candidate is named Dan Greeney. Dan Greeney is a television writer, lawyer, and Harvard University graduate. Greeney is credited with writing the episode of The Simpsons, Bart to the Future, in 2000. The episode presented the possibility of a Donald Trump presidency, which would occur in 2016. On May 26, 2026, Greeney announced his intention to run for president in 2028 on his Instagram account. In a press release, his campaign stated he would run as a progressive Republican in the tradition of Abraham Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt, naming universal health care and the Green New Deal as policy planks. He held his official campaign announcement on June 5, 2026. And forming an exploratory committee is one Gregory Bovino. Gregory Bovino served as the commander-at-large of the United States Border Patrol from October 2025 until his removal in January 2026. In June 2026, News Nation and the Daily Beast had reported that Bovino had taken steps towards running in the 2028 election, including forming an exploratory committee. He told News Nation that his campaign was currently exploratory, but would launch a formal campaign if all comes together. Following the report, Bovino posted to X that if running for president is what it takes to actually get mass deportation done, then all options are on the table. A campaign website created by supporters of Bovino lists policy planks such as reinstating the Department of Government Efficiency and creating a Department of Masculinity. Now, here are other Republicans who have expressed interest in running for the Republican presidential nomination: Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana, Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and Vice President J.D. Vance. And speculated by the media as potential Republican candidates include minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, Tom Brady, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders of Arkansas, and Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia. On the Democratic side, there are no formally declared candidates, but these are ones that have expressed an interest in running for the Democratic presidential nomination. They include Governor Andy Beshear of Kentucky, former Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, former Ambassador Rahm Emanuel, Senator Ruben Gallego of Arizona, former Vice President Kamala Harris, Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona, Representative Ro Khanna from California, former Senior Advisor to the President Mitch Landrieu from Louisiana, former news anchor Don Lemon, also from Louisiana, Governor Gavin Newsom from here in California, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, Senator Elissa Slotkin from Minnesota, Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, and Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. And those that have speculated by the media as potential Democratic candidates include businessman Hunter Biden from Delaware, Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois, Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, and Senator Raphael Warnock from Georgia. And those running as third-party and independent candidates, here's one that's formed an exploratory committee, Joe Jorgensen. Joe Jorgensen is an academic and political activist who was the Libertarian Party's presidential nominee in the 2020 election. In May 2026, Jorgensen announced the formation of an exploratory committee to weigh a potential run for the 2028 Libertarian presidential nomination. And those individuals that have expressed an interest in running as third-party or independent candidates include Afroman, a musician from Ohio, and entrepreneur Andrew Yang of New York. Now, here are some potential polls for the general election. Most recent one comes from Zogby for July 1st through the 4th, 2026, sampling 1,003 likely voters. And between J.D. Vance versus Kamala Harris, the leader was Kamala at 48%, J.D. Vance 43%, with undecided 9%. And if it's J.D. Vance versus Gavin Newsom for July 1st to the 4th, 2026, it's J.D. Vance 45%, Gavin Newsom 38%, with 7% undecided. J.D. Vance versus Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, it is once again J.D. Vance 45%, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez 38%, undecided 7%. Now, if it's Mark Rubio, that's the Republican candidate, it would be Kamala Harris at 46%, Marco Rubio 41%, undecided 13%. Marco Rubio versus Gavin Newsom, Rubio at 40%, Newsom 36%, undecided 24%. And Rubio versus Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, it's Rubio 39%, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at 38%, undecided 23%. and J.D. Vance versus Gavin Newsom. This was actually done by the Terrence Group for June 20th to the 24th, 2026, of 550 likely voters. J.D. Vance, 47%, Newsom, 43%. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Voter Information. Keep it right here for everything regarding elections and elected officials right here in the city, the state, and the nation. Until next time, everybody, this is your election guru, Mark Braun. Happy voting and peace.